Today's podcast is sponsored by RadRx, your source for quality online education for interventional and diagnostic radiology coding, taught by subject matter expert Stacy Buck. For more information and testimonials, visit RadRx.com. Struggling to learn interventional radiology coding? If so, RadRx has the perfect solution for you. Cracking the IR Code, Mastering Interventional Radiology and Cardiology online training program. In this program, interventional radiology coding expert Stacy Buck breaks down the complexities of interventional radiology coding in easy-to-understand terms so you can grasp this complex specialty. Through her course, Stacy has assisted many coders with little or no interventional radiology coding experience in successfully passing the CIRC exam on the first attempt. For additional information and testimonials, visit RadRx.com. Welcome to Who Cares What Stacy Says, a podcast providing insights and advice on how to take your medical coding career to the next level. And now, here's your host, Stacy Buck.
Welcome to Who Cares What Stacy Says. I am your host, Stacy Buck. In today's episode, I continue my discussion with Tony Elholmes, founder and CEO of Alpha Coding Experts and host of the Alpha Coding Podcast. As we did in part one, Tony and I discussed a variety of topics. In this episode, we discussed the effects of COVID on the coding industry, the pros and cons of working from home, and work-life balance. We also speculated on the biggest changes that will occur in the healthcare industry in the next 10 years. And now here's part two of my interview with Tony Elholmes. Yeah. So my experience was, my consulting is outpatient based. It's outpatient surgery based. So obviously there was, some impact, to the consulting piece where I'm doing the coding, I'm doing the concurrent auditing, things of that nature. But for me, it was the online course that really was, the savior in, 2020, because people are now like, hey, I need like remote education. And some people are like, well, now I have time. I'm not working 40 hours a week. And I even had some facilities pay for their coders to do online training because they're like, we don't want to cut hours. We don't want to, furlough these people. So we're going to let them do continuing education on the clock and pay for it. So there were some people who did that. So I was really happy to have that. And I was kind of like, darn it, I wish I had like more to offer than what I had. And now I have a second, course for diagnostic radiology that I added in addition to IR. But I think it's really changed, just looking at different organizations, the way we all do things. There was always already a certain degree of things that were done remotely that was already there. But I just see that expanding more and more. So how do you feel? So everybody always wants to, work from home. I want to work from home. I want to work from home. I want to work from home. And I tell people, it's not all that it's cracked up to be. Now, my perspective is going to be different from your perspective because I live alone. I don't have anybody like in the house like with me. So I'm here all the time alone. So that's challenging in that I miss interacting with people. You probably miss that too. You probably miss interacting with adults during the day, maybe face to face. It's nice to have adult conversation in addition to talking to children. So, for me, I kind of have mixed feelings about it. I've been doing it for years. And for me, a perfect world would be 50-50, 50% in an office with people and 50% at home. So what are your thoughts on the work at home? And then how do you deal with some of the cons of working from home? Again, your perspective is going to be much different on this than mine will be.
Yeah, of course. I've got three kids at home, so it's totally different, like you said. But before I had, kids and all of the stuff that I dealt with, I did a hybrid. I would work from home half the week. And this was when I was employed. I would go into the office. But I was on the road quite a bit, so I wasn't really in the office. But I think a lot of people think that it's just like the greatest thing ever, and they don't really understand all that comes with working from home. Mm-hmm. When you work from home, you're always like kind of thinking about work because there's not this separation of, oh, I'm working. Oh, no, I'm home. And so there's this mixing and mingling of the two spaces. And so actually, I ended up getting an office space, a commercial space in 2020 because I needed that separation. Mm-hmm. And so I have days where I go into the office and then I have days where I work from home, depending on my schedule and what's going on. But I think a healthy balance is really important for most people because working from home 100% can be very isolating.
Yes.
You don't have that interaction. You don't have that. It's not office banter, but you know, like developing interpersonal relationships with people and, there's just something about being able to talk to somebody, sit down and have a cup of coffee with somebody.
Right.
That you can't replace with Zoom. You just can't. And I think, especially if you work on a team or if you are a newer coder that needs a lot of mentoring and a lot of support,
right,
it's really important that you have access to that. And when you're more siloed and when you're working from home, you don't always know when to ask for help and sometimes it's too late. And so when you're in the office, you just have the advantage of kind of, you know, looking over the cubicle or whatever you're in and getting that immediate feedback. So there's pros and cons, but I personally like a good balance between going to my office, getting away from my kids, having a cup of coffee in peace, and,
right,
seeing people and having those, like you said, adult conversations. And I think there's also something called Zoom fatigue. Like it's exhausting to do video calls all day. Sometimes my schedule, literally there's no in between in the meetings. And so I work more when I work at home than I do when I go into my office and there's a little bit of break between, you know, getting up and going to get coffee and, you know, talking to this person and that sort of thing. So working from home has definitely got its perks. But understand that there are some trade-offs to working from home, especially if you have family around.
Yeah. I mean, it's on either side. I think if you're in my situation, it has its own unique challenges. And then like in your situation, it does as well. I was thrilled this year that some people were back to in-person like meetings and conferences. Like the first big conference I got to go to this year was the Florida Health Information Management Association annual meeting in July. And it was so nice to be around 300 human beings, you know, for multiple days. And that's really like conferences are like my outlet, like all the time. Like I go to these conferences and people are like, you are like the Energizer Bunny. You like never stop. Like I'm the one at midnight. Like I'm not even tired. I don't want to go to bed. I'm like, look, I'll sleep when I get home. I'm around people. I need socialization. So I am that person who will get, you know, 3-4 hours of sleep at night at a conference and I'm good. And then I'll just come home and then I'll catch up on my sleep like when I get here. So I love the in-person, even as a presenter, I'm not even talking about an attendee. I get tired of talking over a computer to people.
Yes.
I mean, I did a lot of virtual presentations. Now the positive side of, you know, doing virtual was I got to speak to people in states I never would have been able to speak to before. And so I'm appreciative of that, but that just gets so old sitting behind a computer and talking. I prefer as a speaker, as an instructor, to be in front of my audience, because I don't know about you, I like to see their facial expressions and make sure that there's comprehension and get that real-time feedback. And you don't get that real-time feedback when you're doing, even on Zoom, you've got all these faces you're trying to look at. If they're showing you're presenting, you can't look at that and see if they're really absorbing the material. So I personally am just, I've never been a fan of it. I like as the speaker to be in front of the audience. Now, just one other like thing about working from home. So I find that this like, you know, this started many years ago and it's still an issue. It spills over into the personal life because when you work from home, when you get up in the morning, you don't have to get ready for work. So what do? I roll out of bed, I make some coffee, I watch some TV. I do change out of my pajamas and I put on a pair of jeans or a pair of yoga pants with a t-shirt. I go that far. No makeup, no nothing, hair on top of the head. And so I work like that all day. And then at the end of the day, you know, when I think about going out, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's so much effort to like shower and get ready now and like do everything to like go out for like a few hours. So you tend to not venture out as much as when you're working. I don't know if other people listening, you know, have fallen into that habit working from home, but it's just like, oh, it's so much effort to just do this, to go out for 2 or 3 hours. I don't know if I want to do it. And so then you tend to just be stuck inside. So that's a habit for a while. I was really good about it, pushing myself and making plans and doing things. And now, unfortunately, I'm back into a rut just because of different circumstances. And I'm like, I got to get out of it. So when we're done with like our podcast interview here, I'm going to go to the park on the water and I'm going to take a nice walk and get some fresh air and get outside. I'm going to still look like a hot mess. Like you see me looking like a hot mess right now. We were joking about this, right? And I'm like, she's like, do I need to be camera ready? I'm like, I'm not going to record any video for anybody. We're just going to be looking at each other. And that was one of the things that was making us laugh before we started the podcast, because Tony had to keep moving closer so her microphone would pick up her voice. So her face is just full on like in the camera looking at me.
Yeah,
so
we were having a good laugh. Every blemish.
Stop laughing.
Oh my God.
So we're seeing each other's, you know, work from home looks like right now.
Up close and personal.
Yeah, when people see me at conferences, I look very, it's exciting to go to conferences because, oh my gosh, I get to like dress up and put on everything. So when I went to FHIMA, it was kind of funny. I hadn't really gone anywhere major in a while. And during COVID, all I did was shop. What can you do? Like, what's open? You shop online or you go to the mall or you go out to eat, because so many things, there were no entertainment, you know, venues open, nothing going on. I have so many clothes, shoes, purses. I took 5 bags with me to Orlando I went to FHIMA for 5 days. Okay. 14 pairs of shoes, all these purses. And I'm like, I am just going to like wear the heck out of like all this stuff for the next 5 days. I was doing wardrobe changes. I had a daytime outfit, a nighttime outfit. And everybody's like, oh, what shoes are you wearing now? Because I'm known for my really fancy shoes. So I was having a good old time. I'm like, I need a conference like 3 or 4 weeks long just to go through all my really cool stuff that I've accumulated.
You are totally one of those people. When we met, you were like decked out to the nines.
But like, I wasn't. For me, that was like so casual and so plain. Like when I like met you for lunch, like I was not having a great day that day. And I just had thrown on casual clothes. And I was, so that was like me, like super, super casual, like not even close to what I would look like all done up for a meeting. But I probably had on some sparkly shoes. I think I did.
I think so. Yeah. And you were like full face of makeup, hair done, nails done. And I'm like 8 million years
pregnant. That's your excuse. That's fine. I don't expect you to go through all that trouble. I've never been pregnant. I've never had kids, but I can't even imagine what that would be like.
Oh my gosh.
I wouldn't want to do anything either. Totally, totally understood. Oh my gosh. I want to ask you this question. I want to try to ask everyone at least one fun question, like every interview that I do. So what is the funniest or oddest thing that you have ever read in a medical record?
Oh my gosh. I was so excited about this question, Stacey.
I'm going to get some good answers to this one when I ask it. Oh, I know, gosh. I will.
There have been some crazy things. I could like,
you
oh
can
my
share
gosh.
More than one if you want to.
Whew. Definitely the craziest one. Okay. So the craziest one was a GI doctor. And
GI
colonoscopies, right? You know how those go. So this doctor was doing his thing in the colonoscopy suite, you know, where the patient is under and he's supposed to be doing the camera and checking for all this stuff. Well, this particular doctor used a dictaphone for all of his dictating. And so I can't exactly remember what type of dictaphone, but it wasn't one that you would like press the button and record. It would just like record, you know, while he was talking, and then he would go back and clean it up. So during the middle of a colonoscopy procedure, his mistress called him.
Oh boy.
And the conversation ended up in the report. So,
oh my gosh.
He was basically saying in his conversation with his mistress about how he didn't want his wife to find out about their relationship. And that there were some questionable credit card charges. I guess they had, you know, had a hotel room or something, wow, and they would meet regularly. But all of this ended up in the report. And what's crazy is
So I have to ask you this. So was this voice recognition? Because I can't see a transcriptionist putting that in the report.
Yes, it was. It was voice recognition. Okay. So I don't know that it was Dragon. I can't remember exactly what program he used. But the only reason why it was found out is because he was one of those doctors that thought everything was a 99215, right? I'm a specialist. Oh boy. And I'm a specialist. So, of course, he got audited.
His ER visit's going to be a 99215 after his wife gets to him.
Exactly. So, he would charge, like, you know, just these ridiculous things. And so, he ended up having to hire us at the time to do a compliance audit. And when we did our sampling, you know, it's like totally random sampling. This note ended up in one of the records that was being audited.
Oh, wow.
And so I was just reading this report and I'm like, oh my God, his wife, his poor wife, like what?
Wow.
Wow. Like, this is so disgusting that he would do this to her. But the fact that it ended up in a patient's medical record that could have been sent to an insurance company.
Or what if the patient requested the records and got a copy of their records and read that?
I know.
Wow.
Could have been picked up. Yeah, it was literally horrible. And so I had to sit down with this doctor and I had to explain to him why he had to be more careful about his voice recognition software and that he needed to actually read his notes before he signed them. Because this
was how did he miss that in signing off on his note?
And he proceeded to tell me that he never reads his notes and he just trusts that the software is going to get everything in there.
Well, and so
I advised him very kindly to do some further inquiry into his notes because it's possible that other conversations were hidden in other notes that were not picked up. So it was a very uncomfortable conversation. It was also uncomfortable reading it because, you know, as somebody that's married, I would never, you know, want to be in that situation. And so I just felt really horrible for his wife. I felt, you know, uncomfortable by the fact that this was in a medical record.
Right.
And, you know better than anybody, right? You can't just delete stuff that's in a medical record after it's been signed.
Right.
You have to file an addendum and there's a process. It's not like it just disappears.
Exactly.
It never disappears.
So do you know, yeah, did his wife ever find out? Do you know, or was?
I don't know how that whole thing played out, but it was really awful. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen. I've also seen notes where brain surgery was performed in the office. I've seen as well.
Yeah.
Like a craniotomy was done in the office. And it's like, how?
Yeah, that's kind of interesting.
Yes, yes. The other thing that I used to do a lot of is shadowing. So I would shadow new doctors. I would shadow doctors that had, you know, issues with their documentation. So shadowing is basically you're a fly on the wall. You follow the doctor around and you pay attention to everything that he says and give him feedback, or him or her, depending on if they do well or not. And I've had, you know, the opportunity to see shadow doctors in the clinic and hospital. I've been in the OR, observed many cases, which is incredible for coders to be able to do, because when you see it, you just, you know, things just connect in a different way when you see them versus when you're just reading them. But I would frequently have to tell doctors, hey, I was in that room. You didn't touch the patient's abdomen. You didn't listen to their lungs. You didn't check their pedal pulses. So why is it in your note?
Right.
And they would say, well, you know, it's harder to get rid of it than it is to keep it in there. And that is disturbing.
Yes.
Because there's so many templated, you know, records that we see that it's like, what's real, what's not, and did this even happen?
Yeah, no, that's definitely a problem. So when you first started that story and you mentioned GI doctor, okay, I'm sure you know where my mind went, where a lot of minds go.
Exactly.
Talk about, you know, funny things or odd things you read in a medical record. And it reminded me of something that I saw this morning posted in a Facebook group. And so it says, this it was not in a medical group. It was in like this funny group that I'm a member of where people post funny memes. And so it says, just so you know, nothing accidentally goes in your butt. Sincerely, the ER staff. Because those stories are the ones that seem to be most prevalent about objects that end up inserted into a rectum. And whenever I talk to people, I don't care who it is I talk to who have those like stories about ER records, the story is always, I fell on it. You know, I slipped and fell on it. And it's like, wow, what are the odds of falling precisely that way to get it?
It's like, really?
Yeah.
That's not even believable.
Get it like up there. So that was just when you started talking that I'm like, oh, I saw that this morning. So I had to like, you know, pull that up and like read it. So something bizarre that I saw like not too long ago, I probably am not getting this exactly right, but there was a patient where it said in her history that she had had her tonsils removed. They grew back. She had a breast reduction. Breast tissue grew back. And then she had a tubal ligation and her tubes grew back and she's got pregnant. And I was like, or she got pregnant with a tubal ligation. I'm like, what kind of freak person like is this? Like, what am I reading? Like, I didn't know.
A medical mystery.
Yeah. Like what to make of that? I'm like, what? You just, you know, like a lizard, you lop off the tail and it grows back. I'm like, I've never heard of such a thing in my life. I mean, we've heard of like tubal ligation and then people getting pregnant. Okay. It happens. But the tonsils coming back, breast tissue being removed. I'm like, that. So that's probably the crazy. It's not the funniest thing I've seen. It was like bizarre thing. I think I've like ever seen like in a record. I'm like, okay, body parts are growing back. I'm like, okay.
There's
imagining some... that woman and explaining to your husband how you got pregnant.
Oh my gosh.
Had, you know, a procedure done to prevent that. So
there's some specialties like you just would not believe what, I mean, coders are reading, right? Like,
yeah,
it's crazy.
There is
especially urology.
Yes, there's a lot of crazy stuff. I mean, you know, me, I used to do like ED, like audits, like a long time ago, like as part of like my one job. And I remember I was like, oh, I'm going to get to audit ED charts. This is going to be so much fun. I'll get to read like entertaining stuff. I was so disappointed. It was like old people with like chest pain and like GERD. I'm like, this is such a boring ER. Like where I work, I'm like, I want to see the good stuff that other people
talk about. Oh my gosh. Like Detroit, Michigan, level one trauma facility. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. It, depending upon where you're located is going. Yeah. It's going to determine your patient population. And just where I was at the time, the patient population was not very exciting. So that was disappointing. My little exposure to ER records. I didn't see anything that was even remotely entertaining, or at least maybe not the records I sampled. Maybe they were in there somewhere, but we didn't get enough of them.
Oh my gosh. Well, one of my first jobs was actually working in an oncology clinic, and I would find myself crying throughout the day, you know, in the beginning, because it was like you would see these people that had cancer or terminal cancer, and then they would be so young, and it was just like, oh my gosh, like this is devastating. And it's like, you know, thinking about their families and just how they're navigating all of that. So there's like, you know, there's obviously funny and humorous things that we see, but there's also like this, you know, these horrible tragedies and things that you see. And it's really hard not to feel anything or, you know, be connected to the stories.
Yeah, that's definitely challenging. I think over time, I hate to say this, but you get a little bit desensitized to it.
You do.
And you're just focused on the information. It becomes like more routine. But I briefly, when I was in school, you know, working on my degree for HIM, I had a part-time job in the evenings. I was working a full-time job and going to school and also squeezing in like part-time hours. I worked in medical records at a psychiatric facility, and it was children and adolescents. And you want to talk about reading some heartbreaking stuff in those records of what some of those kids were subjected to and what they went through. That was truly heartbreaking. And then I was mainly their evening receptionist, and I would only help out in medical records when needed. So then I would have to see those parents face to face when they would come in to visit their kids. And that was hard, knowing that some of those kids were there because of what their parents had done to them. And so that was it's not a usual thing where your receptionist would also be working in medical records, right, and privy to that. But that's where it was very challenging for me, because I have to be very nice and kind and polite to these people, knowing that some of them were awful people, you know, behind closed doors. So there's definitely some challenges. And if you have to deal with people face to face, I think one of the things about HIM and coding that I like is that we are such an important part of the healthcare system, but we're behind the scenes and we don't have that patient, you know, contact, that direct patient contact. I know I don't have what it takes to be around people that are suffering and going through these things day in and day out. And I mean, I have so much respect and admiration for people who go out and do that every single day. That takes a special person to be able to do that. So all the healthcare workers, the doctors, the nurses, all the other people in patient care, I mean, it's just amazing like what you do, especially with everything we've been dealing with. I know it's made things like especially difficult. So that reminds me of a funny story. So I'll tell this story. This isn't a personal story. This is a secondhand story, but I think it's funny. So it was my second boss that I had working in HIM, not the one I got sassy with. Asked, what is she doing all day while I'm working?
Insubordination. Not
her. It was the next place I went to where I had a really great boss. It was very supportive. So one day we were talking and, you know, about how she got into HIM. You know, back then it was medical record administration. Again, like old school, you know, how'd you get into it? Well, she came from a family who I believe her father was a physician, and she wanted to get into the medical profession and had looked into doing like patient care. And when she was a teenager, she went to the hospital to volunteer and, you know, work at the hospital. And I believe it was her first day or very close to her first day being there. One of the things they asked her to do was to go into this patient's room and brush the woman's hair. And when she was brushing the woman's hair, she keeled over and dropped dead. So that took
her, oh my gosh.
So that took her away from patient care and steered her towards working behind the scenes. Oh, so that's something that could probably be like a major life-changing event, obviously, to have something like that occur. So again, not my story, but I was like, oh my gosh, I can't even imagine like something like that like happening. And so that's how she ended up in HIM.
Right.
Crazy stuff. Okay. So let me, I want to ask you actually two more questions before we wrap up. So what do you think will be the biggest change that our industry will be facing in the next 10 years? Like if you had to like have your Back to the Future moment, like, isn't that a great movie when we were watching that when we were like younger? Well, you're way younger than me, but even so, like watching that, I remember like, you know, back in like the 80s, and then you're like, oh, this is what it's going to be like in 2015. No, not even close. They think, you know, right. They knew what, like flying cars in 2015. Yeah. We're like not even close to flying cars and things like that. Some things were close, the hoverboard. Okay. Maybe relatively close to that. So if you had like your Back to the Future moment and you had to think 10 years ahead, like what do you see for the industry? And what do you think will be the most significant change for us?
Sure. So I do think that value-based care is here to stay. I think that we're going to see a lot more physician-led ACOs, accountable care organizations, because physicians understand patient care better than anybody, not these administrators and these, you know, suits that have these, you know, project management designations and, you know, master's degrees and all that stuff. Like we've found that the boardroom is not always the best indicator of how to manage patient care, but also the cost associated with that care. So I think there's going to be a huge expansion in physician-led ACOs. And capitation used to be the thing before fee-for-service, right? You remember those days.
Yeah.
Capitation. And then we got on this fee-for-service bandwagon, and we've seen that it's just incentivized the wrong type of care. Because if you can't pack those patients into the schedule, if you can't order all these tests and, you know, do all this stuff, then you can't pay the bills, right? You don't make money off of patients that don't require those types of resources. And so the pendulum is shifting back to, I think, a per member per month type of model, where we're seeing that risk sharing more on the physician side. So I think value-based care is absolutely here to stay. The other thing that I think is going to be transformational, and we're just like at the starting point, is digital health and remote patient monitoring. Remote patient monitoring has so many hidden values from being able to take somebody that could go to the ER or in the hospital that could be managed remotely in real time in their home. Like from a cost saving standpoint is monumental. So you're going to see a lot more companies and organizations, especially private equity, is all over this right now. Where they're helping hospitals create this hospital at home type of model with this new technology. And so digital health, we're seeing it with the OPPS changes. There's going to be remote patient monitoring, remote therapeutic monitoring, expansion to telehealth coverage, payment parity. All of this stuff is going to be huge in the next decade.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I think it's cool when I see, you know, things like, you know, patients can monitor their own EKGs at home now with the technology. Like, we've all seen like the, what is it? The cardio mobile, like, you know, little device you can get and it goes to your smartphone, or people wearing like an Apple Watch. They might notice an irregularity, you know, in the health, you know, the health information that the Apple Watch gives you, and you go see the doctor and, hey, you do have a problem here. So I think that technology definitely will assist in patient care. And I'm excited to know where that's going to go, so problems can be identified a lot quicker. What I've also noticed, you know, people who know me know I work in radiology. There's this trend now to take mobile imaging out to patients in their homes. This is now something I'm starting to see in the news more and more, where patients don't have to go somewhere for diagnostics. They can take certain diagnostics to them to help get them, you know, the diagnostics they need, and then obviously get them the treatment that they need. Now, I agree with you as far as like payment models, you know, changing in the future. I think that's the only way that the healthcare industry can be sustained. Like, honestly, like the way that it's going, it's just not sustainable. There are so many dollars that are wasted in healthcare, and there's no way. Like, I made the mistake of making a post on LinkedIn about something, and then I got jumped on by, you know, a person in particular
that trolls.
I don't know anything about billing and insurance. And I'm like, it was a podiatrist who was telling me this, like, by the way. And I'm like, no, this is my whole career. I understand like how like it works. But the thing that frustrates me about healthcare is that the pricing, that price, like a list price for a service, and this is what the post pertained to, the list price has nothing to do with actual cost, and it hasn't in years, and that's a problem. So you have such a huge, you know, range of what a service costs, whether somebody has insurance or not, what insurance they have, whether or not they're self-pay, and you could have the same service range anywhere from like $500 up to $15,000. Why is that? It doesn't make like any sense, you know, for that to occur. And there's actually a book that I read, and I would recommend everybody working in healthcare, like, read this. I read this recently. I'm not done with it. I'm close to done with it. It's called The Price We Pay: What Broke American Healthcare and How to Fix It. And it's by Dr. Marty McCary. And he talks about all of these problems in the healthcare system and talks about unfair billing and predatory billing and things of that nature, and just how you have a lot of people who are taking advantage of the fee-for-service system. It is built the way it's built. It encourages volume, which is not how things should be done. And there's a ton of stuff in this book that I already knew based on my own experience of being a charge auditor and doing other things in my career. But there are other things that I learned about other segments of the industry that I am not a part of. And he talks a lot about going to those alternative models and showing how providers are profitable in those models, where you get X amount of money to take care of a patient. and they have great outcomes, and they will send somebody to the patient's house to check on them if need to. They will send an Uber to the patient's house to get them to appointments. Like, they go above and beyond. They have nutritionists working with patients. Like, they're treating the whole patient, and they have like a whole support system, and it's profitable. It's not fee for service, and it's profitable. So clearly it can be done. So I was impressed with that because I didn't know a lot about that. Just working in radiology, I wouldn't really have exposure, you know, to that model. So I was very impressed with that. But the other thing that struck me reading the book is he was talking about looking at data and looking for outliers, looking for physicians. We know that, looking at the bell curve. That's like, you know, part of, you know, like what we do. And he was talking about that in data analysis he did and giving examples of how looking at those patterns, he's not putting it in these words, but they're coding patterns. We know this because we're coders. That's how we refer to them. So we're looking at the claims data, we're looking at the codes, and he's saying, based on that, you can identify certain physicians that fall out of that normal pattern and then go dig in further and then find out why they have a different pattern. Because physicians will say, well, my patients are just sicker than everybody else's patients. That's what a lot of them like to say. No, there are specific reasons. There was one doctor who did C-sections. They found that this guy was scheduling C-sections so he didn't get calls on the weekend and get bothered on the weekend. You know, so he was scheduling patients for that, for delivering babies. Like, so there you go. That's just like, you know, one example. But when he was talking about digging into these outliers, as I'm reading this book and he's talking about that portion, I'm like, do you know who sees this first? Coders, medical coders, yes, see the patterns first, because we are reading the medical records every single day. We don't, especially if you're coding in a hospital and you are having multiple providers, multiple physicians doing the same service, you definitely see the patterns of doctors and how they compare to each other. Now, if you're within a practice or a small practice, you may not see a lot of deviation if you're limited, but the more you get exposed to, and like me, I've worked with physician practices, I work with hospitals, and I work with people all over the country. There's a certain, you know, level of service that's pretty routine for the most part. And right, you come to see that there's variation, but then you see some providers and it's like, wow, this is like different, like from the, like, why, like what is different? So it's not that they're doing anything wrong. It could be that there is something different about their patient population. It is entirely possible. But I'm like, why don't people talk to medical coders? We don't need data analysis. Just come talk. We'll give you enough anecdotal evidence to start like digging around and like finding things. I'm like, we don't need to like go that far. And you're, you know, pulling all the data and graphs. And I'm like, no. I'm like, we've got like what you need. So anyway, great book. Anybody working in healthcare, I definitely think you should read it. So I lied. I'm going to ask you another question then. So one question that I had on the list is, so I'll just ask you for one. So I said, what are three books you would recommend to my audience? I just recommended one. So what book, you know, did you find helped you or did you find interesting that you would recommend to my listeners?
Sure. So it's not healthcare specific, but I have two. So Start With Why by Simon Sinek. It's not Different
Shades of Gray. I'll let you share it. Okay. And by the way, I've never read that book and I'm not going to read that book. FYI. I'll put it to rest right either. Now.
But I have read the book that you recommended, and it is a phenomenal read. I totally agree with you. So Start With Why by Simon Sinek. I think that guy is a genius. Mm-hmm. He just has a way of making you think differently. The other one, if you're interested in entrepreneurship, which a lot of people are, is Rich Dad, Poor Dad. That book by Robert Kiyosaki was life-changing for me. It totally transformed the way that I looked at money, the way that I looked at my time. So I would highly recommend those two books. I think
I may have to check that one out. Phenomenal. I've actually never read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I've heard a lot of good things about it, but I've never read it. So I'll definitely have to put I don't read a lot. I got to be honest, because when you have a job where you're reading all the time in your job, reading for pleasure, I'm like, that's not pleasurable. I've been like reading stuff all day long. True. So where I used to like read a lot, I just don't really read because I'm like tired of reading things. Okay. So this is the last question that I'm going to ask you before we wrap up. So what is one question that you wish I had asked and how would you have answered? So this is your opportunity to just come up with anything. The funnier, the better, by the way. Let's close on a funny note. If you got, don't mean to put you on the spot, but if you got something super funny,
pressure,
now's
right?
The time to like let it rip.
Oh my gosh. I don't know if it's funny. Gosh, now I'm like blanking, Stacey. I don't even know what to say.
Well, we could try to like have a reenactment of our conversation before we hit the record button and talk about all of those things.
We were literally laughing for like an hour before we hit the record button. It was so funny.
We couldn't
stop laughing.
We were crying, like couldn't breathe. It was. I'm like, I got to get up and go to the bathroom. I'm laughing so hard.
It was like a belly laugh, like a deep belly laugh. So Stacey and I would get into trouble if we worked together. Like we would be the ones that were like always reprimanded for like talking and oh man.
Definitely.
I think that the question that I wish you would have asked me is, what's the hardest part of my job?
Okay.
It's not funny at all, but
that's okay.
I would say,
hey, the question is yours to answer. Feel free to give me any answer that you want.
I think the hardest part of my job is balance, finding balance. It's really difficult being an entrepreneur, being a consultant, being an expert witness, being, you know, a mentor, being a part of a chapter association. And, you know, because I think you actually did a podcast episode recently about the importance of getting involved in chapter associations.
Yeah. And just not to interrupt you, but that was like my like worst like podcast as far as listeners, like barely anybody listened to it.
Really?
Clearly nobody has an interest in like volunteering. I'm like, nice to know. That has the smallest number of listens out of every podcast I've done.
That's,
I think it's like a 28. That's like it. Nobody cares.
Oh my gosh, that was a great episode. I really liked the episode. And I think you really have to change your mindset on the value of volunteering, because it's not like, it's not fun to get up on a Saturday morning and go and proctor, right? Like it's not something that I just die to get out of bed to do, but it's part of giving back. And through giving back, you have, it's the law of reciprocity. It always comes back to you. So think about when you were sitting in that chair taking your test, there was somebody that gave up their Saturday to be able to give you that opportunity. So I think you always want to strive to find balance. Balance is so key. And I struggle with this more than probably anybody. I am literally, Stacey, I'm a workaholic. It's bad.
I know you are. You have to be. I mean, I used to do that. I used to be one too. I get it. You're a lot younger than me, so you'll hit the point that I hit eventually. I guarantee you'll get there at some point.
Yes.
I guarantee.
When you tell that story, I always kind of think about that, because you're like, I found a way to work smarter, not harder.
Yes.
And I think, I mean, that's eventually going to be what happens. And, you know, I don't want to predict the future, but you have to find ways to work smarter, not harder. But balance is so, so, so important. And it's the thing I struggle with the most. So the hardest thing about my job is finding balance. I don't think that's funny at all. And I'm sorry, Stacey.
That's okay. Well, no, it's funny. When I ask people about like, what do you want me to talk about for a podcast episode? They talk about work-life balance. And I'm like, okay, it's a great topic and I understand that, but I don't know that I'm the best suited to talk about that, because my life is very different from the lives of other people. It's like my work, you know, life balance is very good. I work part-time. How much more balance can you be? I don't have kids. I'm not juggling other things. It's just me. I don't have other responsibilities outside of me. Whereas when I've talked to people, I used to do one-on-one coaching like briefly. And I gave that up because I didn't really like it. I like speaking more to like the group. And that was always a challenge for me when people would come to me with these jam-packed schedules and they're wanting to know like how to manage them. I'm like, well, what things do you absolutely not have to do? What things can you cut? And they're like, nothing. And I'm like, well, you need to like find a way to cut. One person I worked with, honestly, I didn't feel like she could like cut anything, like seriously. And I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. She had won a free coaching session, so she hadn't paid me. So I didn't like feel bad that I couldn't, you know, assist, you know, in that. But I'm like, I really don't know what to say. You know, general advice I give people is that you control your schedule. You control what goes on your schedule. Don't be afraid to say no to things. If you're just like a quick piece of advice is whatever goals you've set for yourself or where you want to be, don't say yes to things that stand in the way of that or move you further away from that goal. you need to prioritize that way. Otherwise, you'll never get to where you want to go. And some people don't have clarity about where they want to go. First, you need that. But then anytime a new opportunity comes to you, you know, you need to ask yourself, does this move me closer to where I want to be or further away, you know, from where I want to be? You know, there's a friend of mine, you know, who does consulting, and a while back, she's like, I want to pick your brain on something. Someone, you know, came to me and offered me this opportunity. And I think it was to be a partner, like in a billing company. And so she was sharing, you know, her concerns with me. And I said, well, this is what it comes down to. I go, do you want to be involved in billing? Do you want to get in the weeds of that? Do you want the responsibility, or do you want to do what you've already planned? And I go, because getting into the billing company is going to be stressful, and it's not going to move you any closer, you know, to where you want to be. And she's like, you kind of confirmed what I was, you know, thinking, you know, but I wanted to run that by you. I said, that's how I make my decisions. If it's not going to move me closer to where I want to be, then I don't do it. If something is going to stress me out, like I used to have a hard time saying no. I said yes to everybody and everything all the time back in my workaholic days. And now I have no problem saying no and like setting like my boundaries, like in my limits. So I think that that's, so I guess I'm kind of like counseling you like right now.
Like, I know. It's like a therapy session thing.
You know,
we'll get the bill after or what?
At the end, where you just have to set like very, you know, strict, you know, boundaries for yourself and stick to them. Like particularly when you have your own business, like you have to be very, you know, good about, these are my set office hours. This is when I start work. This is when I stop work. When work is over, work is over. I focus on me. I focus on my family. I don't take phone calls at crazy hours from people. You know, it just, if you make yours, it's like I tell people, today's favor sometimes becomes tomorrow's expectation. So you have to be very careful about what you allow. And I say what you allow, because you don't have to answer your phone. God forbid somebody has to wait for a call back tomorrow. I'm like, what we do is not life and death. We're not, you know, working with patients. We're not doctors. We're not, you know, we're working behind the scenes. I ask people, is it going to matter if that waits until tomorrow? Like, why are you taking, you know, phone calls? Now, sometimes it happens. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying you never do it. I do what I need to do when I need to do it. But I found for me, that's just worked out really well. Or saying, yeah, even speaking engagements. I don't accept all speaking engagements. I think I talked about this with Victoria Mull when I did an interview with her, that, you know, people want me to speak and I just say no, because like, if you're in California, I'm not getting on a Zoom meeting at 9 o'clock at night. I'm just not doing it.
Right.
Am I here sitting in my house? Yes. Am I going to get on a Zoom meeting? No. I also don't accept a lot of weekend like meetings, because I would find when I would say yes to things and I'd be doing them, I'd be angry before I did them and I wouldn't be enjoying them. And I'm like, why am I doing this to myself? I don't need to do this to myself. So it's really just making choices. And then, you know, for me, again, I don't have kids, I don't have that family. But for those who do, it's about making sure that you set aside that quality time with like no interruptions and just shut down everything like work related, because really that's what's most important. I mean, when I went through the challenges that I did, like health wise, like all, you know, those years ago, that when you can't do anything and you're bedridden, oh my gosh, you have a lot of time to like reflect on your life. And I'm like, wow, look at my long resume and my long list of accomplishments and how much that I've done. And I'm like, you know what? It doesn't matter, because it's not helping me now. It's not serving me now. And I'm like, I don't really have any meaningful relationships in my life. You know, that was kind of like, there were a lot of things I noticed that I was missing. But, and there were a lot of reasons why I threw myself into my work. I mean, I ended up doing a lot of personal work on myself after that experience, and digging into a lot of reasons why I did certain things and why I didn't do certain things, and made poor choices. I made poor choices in my personal life a lot. People would see me very successful in business, but they didn't know what was going on behind the scenes. And I always tell people that, I go, you, because people are like, oh, they would be like envious of like what they saw. I'm like, you know, and it's like, people always look at things like the grass is like always, you know, greener kind of thing. Like a simple example, a friend of mine is like, oh, you're so lucky. You're not married. You can go buy what you want and do what you want. And you don't have to answer to anybody. And I said to her, I go, you know what? I said, yes. I said, I have a closet full of nice things and I have nice things in my house and I get to drive whatever car I want. I go, but you know what? I wake up every morning alone with my things. I said, so there, right, you have to look at it from that perspective. So she's looking at it like, I'm married with the kids and I can't do all these things. But I'm like, you have a husband, you have a family. And while it's not perfect, I get it. I haven't been married, but I've been in bad relationships. So a bad relationship is a bad relationship, you know, with the piece of paper or without a piece of paper. So I've been in that. If it's that bad, then just end it. Just get out of it, which I didn't do for a very long time in one situation I was in. But anyway, I don't want to get into a counseling session here, like being a downer to people, hanging up on a personal thing. Boy, I could keep going and talking a lot about those things. So, okay. So we are definitely going to wrap up. We've been talking for a while. This is going to be a two-part episode for sure. So I'm so thrilled that you have my next two episodes covered. That makes me happy because it didn't look like it was going to happen a couple of hours ago with the technical difficulties. So we did it and we like held it together. We had a few laughs, but we didn't go completely crazy and like lose it like we did before.
Oh my gosh, recording. That was so bad.
Okay. Oh, it was funny. I needed that laugh. I like really, really needed that laugh.
I did too. So
it was good. It was good for sure. So thank you for that. So, okay. So this is definitely the last question. Where can my listeners find you online? I want them all to connect with you if they're not already connected with you.
Yeah. So definitely on LinkedIn, Tony L. Holmes, and then Alpha Coding Podcast is my podcast. I will warn everybody, I recorded 72 episodes, but I did take some time off and I'm almost back and up running again. But Alpha Coding Podcast is my baby and I love to share it with everybody. And of course, website alphacodingexperts.com. So I love to connect with any of your listeners, and I'm a big fan of your work, Stacey, and I'm so glad that we met and we've been able to develop this, you know, great relationship, and that I can have belly laughs with you for a couple hours.
Yeah, I'll have to bring you back for a future episode and we'll just have to like make it like one that's just like entertaining, like just find like some funny things, things to discuss and like go through those. But now I want to give a shout out to your podcast. I mean, Tony's podcast, it's very well produced, I have to say. It's one of the best produced podcasts. You know, I think that I've listened to, and if you're looking for, you know, coding tips and billing tips and that kind of thing, Tony gets into things that I don't get into. Like in my podcast, people say, I'm like, what do you want to hear about in the podcast? And they give me coding stuff. I'm like, I'm not going to talk coding in the podcast or billing. It's not going to happen. There are other people out there who do that. And I don't want to do that. That's like not my thing. And I only have such a small little, you know, niche to talk about. So I'm just like not interested. I'd rather do something, you know, else, because for me, you talked about mentoring earlier, like years ago, I used to do a lot of one-on-one mentoring with a lot of new professionals. And that takes a lot of time when you're working with people one-on-one. So I feel like the podcast is a way to provide mentoring on a larger scale to many people, to like share the benefit of my experience with them. And then now I want to start doing like interviews with people, because I feel, you know, Brian Quay does interviews, as you know, that's our buddy, you know, Brian Quay, we've been on his podcast. He does them with professionals. And I like to listen to his podcast because I like to hear other people's journey. I like to hear about their challenges. I like to hear their stories, because we can all learn, you know, from each other. So I kind of want to go in that direction. And I'll probably start doing more guest episodes than solo episodes, because honestly, I get bored sitting behind a microphone just talking. Right. I've had so much fun talking to you today to like do this episode. Like, I want to like keep talking for like another 2 hours, like honestly, but but you've got like kids that I'm sure you have to corral. It's been a few hours now. So I will definitely let you go. Thank you so much for being a guest on the podcast. And I can't wait to see you again in person soon.
I know. I'm going to see you soon, Stacey. I really appreciate our time together.
Yep, me too. Thanks so much, Tony. That concludes my interview with Tony L. Holmes. I had so much fun chatting with her. We hope that you found the podcast both informative and entertaining. Many thanks again to Tony for taking time out of her busy schedule to join me. As always, I want to thank all of my loyal listeners. Please, please share the podcast with your friends and your colleagues. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please be sure to give the podcast a 5-star rating and leave a review. If you have a question you would like me to answer in a future episode, please send it to askstacy@radrx.com. That's askstacy, S-T-A-C-I-E, @radrx.com. If you would like to share feedback on the podcast or have suggestions for topics for future episodes, you can send those to podcast@radrx.com. Thanks again for tuning in and have an amazing day.
Thank you for listening to Who Cares What Stacy Says? You can connect with Stacy on social media. You can find her business page for RadRx on Facebook, and you can connect with her personally on LinkedIn. Don't forget to check out the online training courses offered by RadRx. Cracking the IR Code, Mastering Interventional Radiology and Cardiology Online Training, or Cracking the Diagnostic Radiology Code Online Training. Thanks again for tuning in to Who Cares What Stacy Says? A podcast providing insights and advice on how to take your medical coding career to the next level.